Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to That Podcast with That Bale intro. I'm just pulling your chain. I know that if any of you did actually listen past the intro, then and you're listening today, then you will be a... an avid listener of Rule the Roost podcast. It was actually quite it was quite interesting to see. I did have a little look at the retention stats because there was quite a spike in traffic on the last episode actually, and I was intrigued to see and not surprised that the majority of these new listens basically lasted for the intro and then swiftly cut off after about 2 minutes of chat. So that's a nice confidence booster, but no pressure on anyone, least not on Mr. Single Malt Suds, aka Phil. I think that's the other way around, really, isn't it? It's Phil, aka Single Malt Suds.
Depends. It depends on the forum, I guess Single Malt Suds is the primary thing in podcasting and Twitter and etc.
I've just been watching the Social Dilemma, and I'm trying to sort of think on the spot of some way in which to tie that and what it might mean. But I guess we just like doing stuff on the internet, don't we, nowadays?
Yeah, better than leaving the house. Not that we can, but.
Who wants to do that anyway? You can look at a picture of some woods. You don't need to actually walk in them, do you?
Right. No, God forbid.
The only people that walk in woods are nonces and, I don't know.
Murderers.
Murderers. And the person that's walking the dog that finds the... Let's move on.
Go back to that.
I'm sort of rambling already. I mean, it is generally like my MO, isn't it? But... today in particular, it's that nasty, big, grim thing that I don't really want to tap into, but I obviously also do because I'm recording a podcast about it right now. The absolute fucking sickening travesty that was Newcastle at home yesterday. There's a lot of big, fat opinions all over the shop. And obviously, I have my share of them. But come on, right, Phil? I'll give you the stage. I'll give someone else the stage for once. All right. People have heard enough of me talking. Although they haven't, that's why they keep coming back, you know. I'm just saying. But what do you think about yesterday?
I think it was, as you say, a complete travesty. Interestingly, when the whole VAR check was going on, and you know that there's like a point, if it's not going to be called, it's usually immediately, you know, it takes like 10 seconds and like, nah, and then that's it, and it goes on. The longer it goes on, you know that you're in trouble, I think, especially when, you know, it's coming against you. It wasn't a handball, in short, and I think that this is something that we've got to explore a bit, and I think that the narrative is not quite right at the moment from what I've seen in like the papers and Match of the Day and all the Twitter heads banging on about it. People forget that VAR itself is not a sentient being, right? It's not, it doesn't make decisions. It's just a video camera that can replay bits that have happened in the game. People are making decisions based off that, right? Now, I don't know how a professional referee can, first of all, the ones in Stockley Park can watch that from the, you know, it not being a foul or it being a soft foul to it being a player being shoved in the back with his back to the ball and it bouncing off his arm 17 yards from the goal, for that to then be a penalty, i.e. a free shot of goal, i.e. a equalising goal in the 93rd minute. That's not VAR. That's not technology. That is referees making a decision. Even going to the on-pitch screen and the referee watching that, how on earth is he coming to that decision? That is the question. The VAR, you know, oh, you know, people are ruining our game, blah, blah, blah. No, it's terrible refereeing at the bottom of it. You can say rules in this, but the handball rule does have a criteria for, you know, if the player doesn't know anything about it. And, you know, 17 yards from goal with your back to the ball midair after being shoved, how is that a handball?
I mean, because this has been the mitigation, right, for when there's been that argument that you're presenting here, that there's a lack of either aptitude or guts, or there's, you know, even more kind of malicious agendas at play to maintain sort of hegemony of the top clubs, so on and so forth. Whatever it is, when people have criticised the referees, the comeback has always been, well, to be fair, the letter of the law is, intentional or not, the ball strikes basically anything below the shoulder, then it's a handball, right? Mm-hmm. But you're saying that, because I have struggled to find an actual definition of this, but it seems as though you have, and there is mitigation for the referee's own objectivity, right?
Yeah, that's, I can't remember, somebody tweeted it, I think it was Darren Bent, or I think one of those kind of, that level of kind of, you know, pundit tweeted it and kind of underlined the point, and it said that there, because there has to be, you know, this is a decision, and yeah, so it's not the rules in my book. It's the refereeing, and I think they are being petulant by using VAR the way they do, especially in England. There seems to be that it's really got their back up, that they're being asked to double check everything, and that seems to have been the case since its inception a few years ago. That, you know, I seem to recall that the English referees, PGMOL, were not for it. They were kind of like, you know, not overly happy about it being, you know, their authority being questioned or double checked in real time. Now, that's what I think is the problem. And yes, you can say that there's a big team bias. That's likely true as well, as we see, you know, football, as I said yesterday on Twitter, it's supposed to be a sport, right? It's supposed to be a sport, and yet it is packaged up as this entertainment product that feeds these, you know, all right, it's ironic that we're talking about it on a podcast, but it's that sort of thing. It feeds these column inches, feeds these, you know, opinions, and that there's so much money to be made in that, that it's just so far removed from it being an actual level playing field, excuse the pun, to actually being something that needs to be injected with these controversies. And it's, I don't know what I'm watching. And I think that was quite telling for me, that when it was being played out yesterday, the VAR check, and when it went to a penalty, I wasn't like throwing anything at the TV. I just felt completely distanced from what was happening. And I think that's telling for me, that it just shows that, you know, I don't watch Love Island. I don't watch Big Brother. I don't watch The Apprentice, because I'm not interested in that sort of, is it real life, semi coherent entertainment product. I'm watching something because I want to see a sport being played at its highest level. I don't need any kind of interruptions or interjections of things. And that's the kind of feeling I got from it. That's why I've been quite vocal about it, whereas usually I just don't get involved in VAR stuff, right? Because I've got better things to do with my time. But it was just such a telling reaction for me to see that play out, and just feel like, you know, I was watching a movie that I wasn't that interested in, that I wasn't, had no empathy for the characters or whatever. That's the position I felt.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting point, really, and I think this is something that we definitely do need to expand upon, the idea of VAR being sentient or not, and what purpose it actually serves within the game. Because, you know, when there was the initial trepidation from everybody about the use of VAR, they were they packaged it up very neatly. It was very much a case of VAR is going to be implemented to help with those kind of, essentially, like the big decisions, right? If the referee hasn't clearly seen something off the ball. So we've seen it all the way down through the Premier League years, like the crowd react to something, players are remonstrating, and the referee nor the linesman have seen an elbow or something like that that's occurred off the ball. In situations like that, that's kind of what I was assuming VAR would be used for. I mean, I know it really splits opinions, but if I really have to say, and we've been on the receiving end of it, and we've gotten the rub of it as well at the same time, but with the offside, I know sometimes people will say, oh, it was a toe offside, or it was this, or it was that, but the line is the line, right? And an offside is an offside, and as minuscule and as ridiculous as it feels, it's a fair system if it's appropriated with a hard line that you can see, that you can literally draw a line, as you can with Hawkeye and goal line technology. You can clearly draw an offside line. There's no objectivity to that. It is, no matter how little a portion of this person is, he's offside. And yes, I understand off the back of that, there's arguments and discussion about frame rates and the resolution as to, you know, the images and the validity of those results. But still, it's a move towards something that is fair, essentially. But this type of thing now that we're seeing, like with that handball, is because I'm completely with you. I think it was, I joked about it at the top, but I really do think it's an absolute fucking scandal. I think it's just preposterous that Spurs have been denied 3 points in that game. And that kind of takes it down a notch, because as we were kind of talking about on WhatsApp after the game, right, we knew the second Andy Carroll was coming on. We were like, right, here we go. This is the player that causes us problems. Yeah. We know both Sanchez and Dyer are vulnerable in the air. We've seen it at several points throughout this season. And a big disruptive lump like Andy Carroll, what he's known for, you know, jumping in with his elbows, He's a strong lad. He's a big lad. You know, he's got a big thunderous header on him. He's either going to tee one up or he's going to smash one in. And you could just see that happening. And I'm going to be fuming and I'm going to be livid if Spurs concede a goal late to Andy Carroll, because for whatever reason, be it under Pochettino or be it under Mourinho, be it coaching, be it on an individual level, who knows, our inability to deal with set pieces still seems to plague us. And that's something that we need to deal with. And that's a totally different discussion. That's you having a tantrum because you don't like that sometimes football doesn't go your way because your team have done something wrong or the other team have done something right and exploited your weaknesses. To have something like what we witnessed yesterday happen to deny you the points, it's not even about dropping points anymore. It's, as you say, a feeling of coming away from that game like, why am I even watching this? What is the point? Like, this is not a sport anymore. This is, and this is the thing. Like, I know there is so much knee-jerk hyperbole that comes off of the back of this stuff. It's an absolute disgrace. It's the game's gone, the whatever. But you cannot help but feel that way. You cannot help but feel that, as a lot of people warned us, the natural ebb and flow of football will steadily get drained away the more electronic it becomes. I don't know. I can't really think of a, you know, mechanical, robotic, whatever you want to put it. It's such a visceral sport, and that's kind of, you know, it's always been that, right? It's that idea of bottled lightning, of those huge outpourings of emotion that we see in things like the Ajax game, or going back to Man United coming back against Bayern Munich, or Troy Deeney against Leicester. All these kind of incredible moments that, as Pochettino said, without football, I just don't know where these emotions would come from. I don't know where this feeling would come from. But slowly and slowly, it is starting to drain away. Even, you know, off of Moura's goal, our first goal that we did score, I didn't celebrate it at first because straight away I was like, oh, Kane was kind of advanced there, and then Moura came in at the back post. Was he? I don't really know when Kane hit it across or when Kane actually first received it. Did he not? Let's just wait and see. And then you see them kicking off again. There's obviously been no VAR check, and you're just relieved, but you're not getting that kind of feeling of ecstasy really instinctually anymore. And it's becoming more and more a thing. And I think the problem I've kind of felt is that we have, since the Champions League final, as Spurs fans, I found it hard to find the level of detachment where it lies, in so much as, do I feel a bit detached because we missed out on the biggest game that we're probably ever going to see in our lifetimes? Do I feel detached because the Mourinho project, the Pochettino project has started to fade? Do I feel detached because these guys who I held so much love and affection for, Eriksen, Vertonghen, Danny Rose, Kyle Walker, Moussa Dembele, Dele Alli, they're starting to fade or they've moved on elsewhere? Or is it just a general feeling that football is becoming like this staged, managed, made in Chelsea or Love Island, I think you called it yesterday, type proposition where, it is tin foil, mate, but there is a really growing and nagging part of me now that really strongly feels after yesterday, and I know it sounds a bit ridiculous because they got that Lindelof handball against them, but in a clutch moment like that, 95 minutes at Old Trafford or at Anfield, do Liverpool or Manchester United get that given against them? And if they don't, why do they not? Because we saw in that Brighton game, two, for me, stonewall penalties that were not given against Manchester United. Like, they were already 1-0 down to Brighton. And at that point, they were looking like their arses were about to completely fall out. And I think, or it might have been 1-1. And, you know, it was going to be another Crystal Palace game. And then Pogba got away with a criminally stonewall penalty. And that's put down to, oh, because Connolly made too much of it. Well, but that's irrelevant. And then the second one, Maguire, I think, flattened that Connolly lad again. Two challenges as well, which were identical to, ironically, one that Eric Dier did on Paul Pogba in our game against Manchester United last season and was awarded a penalty. But they managed to get away with both of those and obviously subsequently went on to win the game with what was a borderline farce of a penalty after the final. So I'm not talking so much about the actual penalty or not itself. I mean, that's open for debate. I think that's open to much more debate than the one we had with Eric Dier yesterday. But still, the fact that players could be walking off the pitch knowing that the final whistle's gone and then, what, 2-3 minutes later, they've lost the game. And what are we watching, mate? Like, what do we rally behind now? What do we get behind? Because if you're not being faced with something that's fun or keeps you on the edge of your seat in the way that we interpreted it, or the way in which we've grown up with, at least, is it just time to move on and support a non-league team or a lower division team than a Premier League team? Do we just accept now that this is here to stay and that top flight elite level football is fundamentally not for us anymore?
Mm. Yeah, it's just feels like it's stage managed, doesn't it? That's the thing. And it's very hard to kind of, yeah, we don't want to be tinfoil hat about it, but let's be honest, you know, the bigger teams doing better is better for, you know, Sky Sports, BT, newspapers, because they have more fans, they have more interest, and if those fans are interested, they're going to spend more money. So I don't think it sounds ridiculous to say it, but I don't think it is actually that far of the mark to say that, you know, that there is a, maybe it's unconscious bias towards them. But I don't know. But like Mourinho said in his post-match yesterday about how now he realises what it's like to manage a team of, despite us being a big team, a smaller big team of Spurs' stature, because those things do not go for you. So he's seen it, and you know he's been on both sides of the fence now. So it's frustrating and it's weird, in short.
Because, you know, Manchester United are, I mean, I totally get that to some they'll be listening to this thinking, right, you know, Jack's going full flat earth, anti-vaxxer, 5G equals COVID on this. But I just feel that we see too many examples of these kind of power structures of elite clubs. And, you know, these elite level clubs that have cronies, pals, like, you know, Arsenal for years have had chairman or board members who have either been on the Premier League's governing body or high up in the FA. Yeah, people with the levers of power, shall we say, making decisions that affect things for everybody. And there's a lot of money on the line, as we say, that is it actually that ridiculous to suggest that the Premier League as a brand, because it's not the FA, and this is like a common misconception that the Premier League is somehow governed by the FA. It's not. It's its own private entity. It's a corporation that essentially wrestled a lot of power and money away from the FA, which, you know, we can be proud to be a part of in the early days of that. Is it that much of a stretch to say that Manchester United, a team who is one of the biggest global sporting brands alongside, you know, the New York Yankees, the Dallas Cowboys, Barcelona, Real Madrid, that they want them to be good again? That it's not good for their product that they sell around the world to have one of its key assets be a clown car?
I think when you actually think about it, it's kind of naive to think that it doesn't play a part in what happens on the field. I'm not saying there's like a memo that goes out at the start of the season to FA, Premier League, whoever, to, you know, give the bigger teams a rub of the green. I think it's a bit more insidious than that. I just think it's, as you say, it's a brand. I was thinking about this yesterday, and this was going off on a bit in the tangent, maybe going off on a bit tinfoil, but I'd like to see what Sky Sports revenue was like, or whatever measurement it would be, subscriptions, whatever, when Leicester won the title, compared to the year where City and Liverpool were fighting it out up until, you know, pretty much the last game. Because, you know, and you can admit that the latter example is the more interesting one, you would say. Yeah, right. Seeing a small team go up and people try to make a bigger deal out of it, as, you know, as they could. But at the end of the day, does Leicester running away with the Premier League title have a massive global draw to it? No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. So again, we're throwing loads of jigsaw pieces out here and trying to like batter them together, but I think it is worth kind of just acknowledging that, as you say, the Premier League is a corporate brand. It's not a sporting institution. It's there to strengthen its brand. It's there to attract advertising revenue, and it does that by attracting or aiming itself at the bigger audiences, which are the fans of the bigger teams. It's simple marketing, really. And as you say, if there's a little bit of kind of leeway in terms of how the bigger clubs get treated, then it's what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? And it's worth acknowledging this as well. You know, as Spurs fans, we're not like a minnow club. We have definitely benefited in the same sense when up against some muck team like, I don't know, I would say Norwich, but I think they did us quite a few times last season. But, you know, that so we have benefited as well from like a tier down. And I don't know, it's so you have to acknowledge it does benefit you sometimes. But if I hear it evens itself out at the end of the season, that is the biggest load of nonsense that has been spouted about football for decades, because it's unquantifiable. It's nonsense. And Graham Souness yesterday needs to have a word with himself. I don't know if you saw it. His post-match comments was basically everyone was in their right mind questioning the validity of this rule, and he was like, shrug, that's all right. Makes it more exciting, doesn't it? Graham, mate. Absolute nonsense. So, you know, there's actors in this that are... bloody hell, this does sound like a conspiracy podcast now, but this is what we're faced with. It faces us with these questions as to why we're watching something now suddenly where that can occur, because it's completely against what we thought we were watching and what we thought we'd signed up to emotionally and financially. And it's another point on this. Andy Carroll came on last 15 minutes. Your team is 1-0 down. You throw on a big man. That's, you know, fine, great. That's what teams do. That's what you expect to see as a tactic. In those 15 minutes, he called handball 7 times. So about everything that he was involved in, essentially. 7 times he called for a handball. And this is what happens. When you introduce a rule, footballers will adapt to it to find, you know, like Mane in the Champions League final. He literally flicked the ball up to hit Sissoko's arm, knowing full well that he'd get a penalty for it. Do we want to see now a tactic which means in the last few minutes the team losing, we'll throw on two centre backs up front and just, you know, put it about looking for a handball, even if it's on the edge of the penalty area, to try and get something out of it. That ain't football. That is, God knows what that is.
See, the funny thing is, and I know you're not doing this, I'm just saying it as a wider point, because you've raised this kind of very presciently. I don't really hold it against people like Andy Carroll for doing what he's done. I don't hold it against players on an individual level. I don't, I hate to say it, I don't even hold it against Mane. It's players who are being smart. It's exactly what Mourinho said Spurs lack. We need to embrace the dark arts. We need to flex our muscle within the parameters of acceptability, right? We need to start to exploit these things. So that, yeah. I think that's what he's been talking about, being a, you know, smart cunts, as he put it, or intelligent cunts. And I don't hold it against the players, but yeah, as you say, having a mechanism in place that actually legitimizes this, that's when the game, it surely just needs to take a look at itself, because what is football going to look like, you know? And it does sound like this bizarre, gammon, alarmist, knee-jerk kind of rhetoric when you do hear people saying, like, well, you know, what am I going to be coaching the kids at on Saturday or Sunday? Are we going to be teaching them how to play for handballs? It's like, well, yeah, you probably should. If that's what the rules of the game have become, then do it. Tell them to be alert to that. It might win a game for their team.
Yeah, I think that this rule is just, they've tinkered just a step too far with it. And I think that that's, you know, because next week or next game week, we can see legitimately all teams going out and then just trying to kick the ball at each other's hands in the penalty area. And you could have 5-6 penalties a game, which you're not too far off getting at the moment in some respects. So again, that feels a bit gammon to say it, but they could legitimately go out and do that. And I would like, let's say that happened, what would a referee do? They know what's a penalty given what's been given penalties this weekend. Will they be saying, well, it's hit his arm, penalty? That, and you can't blame the players for that. Like, you can't even blame Callum Wilson. I don't know if you saw his post-match yesterday when he was like, yeah, it's great, isn't it? Got me on the score sheet. There still has to be room for shithousery in football, right? So that's fine. But as you say, adapting to the point where the game just becomes a nonsense. I don't understand.
No. It's just very deflating, isn't it? And as we were saying, probably said already on this pod, it's a different type of deflation this time. It's not same old Spurs have just kind of let Andy Carroll in at the back post and he's got one past Lloris when Sanchez or Dier should have picked him up. That you can reconcile.
Yeah, and this, still annoying, but as you say, that's football. You can understand that. That's the risk you run if you don't put a second or a third away.
This starts to make you think, well, what's the lure for this, right? I'm going to come back and pay £60 for yesterday's game for an average, like, what, you know, on average, yeah, okay, I know there's different price points, but the average seat now at White Hart Lane, 55, 60 quid? And to sit and watch that, to sit and second guess the goal we scored, to spend £37 on a pulled pork brioche wrap and a couple of, you know, craft ales, and then watch
sounds
us.
Pretty good, to be honest.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? To TBF, and then have that kind of feeling of just like, wow, great, well, nice one. And I mean, I shudder. I actually saw that, because I'm one of those people, I'm actually quite crap at keeping up with who we've got next and our fixture list and all this type of thing. And it was after the game, after I was making a big belly aching point on WhatsApp about how Man United will never get those type of decisions go against them, I see that our next game is against Manchester United, and honestly, already in my mind, I've consigned myself to the fact they're going to get at least one penalty in that game.
Yeah.
They just are.
It's fair. And as you're saying about like going to a stadium, 55, 60 quid, whatever it is, they're not selling supporting a football team. Understanding your football team, being able to know your players and know what to expect, good and bad, they're selling the drama of it.
Yeah.
Because that's what they think people want. It's gone too far. This spectacle of the Premier League has gone too far. I just want to watch football. I just want to watch my team that I know the players and have a couple of hours of, you know, thinking, oh, I predicted that this would happen and I'm right, rightly, you know, positively or negatively. But, Manchester United, I mean, I would say you couldn't script it, but they probably fucking have, mate. So now we've got this, like, showdown, and Solskjaer and Mourinho have been digging each other out a little bit, light-hearted ribbing over the last couple of days, I think, about this. But, it's tinderbox stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, like, and...
As you say, but going into it, you're just going to think, well, of course they're going to get one, if not two penalties, and even if we've got the game won...
Yeah.
How long do they go back and look for an infringement? I made a point glibly yesterday, I think, about how when does it end? I mean, could you literally go back through a game a day after and say, oh, actually, that was a penalty, or that wasn't a penalty, that didn't cross the line, so chalk that goal off? And that sounds stupid to say, and it sounds like I'm being ridiculous, and I am purposely to a point, but actually... it's not that far off. Or it's not that far away from what we've got at the moment. Man United got a penalty after the whistle. Yeah, all right. It was immediately before the whistle that the infringement happened and whatever. But a game had finished and then restarted to take a penalty so one team could win it. That's crazy.
Yeah, there's, I mean...
This is judgment calls.
It would be hard to see a way in which, I mean, not impossible, but hard to see a way in which that could be implemented, really. But other than maybe, you know, okay, so there's enough of a body of evidence to suggest that at 2-1 down, Manchester United should have had a penalty and so on and so forth. Yep, they went on to draw 2-2 in the end anyway, but they might have gone on to win it 3-2. So in light of that, we'll award them a bonus point or something like that, you know?
And as ridiculous
as that sounds, this is a straw man, I know, but...
But I think, you know, you've just explained an example. And again, I am talking about like a dystopian example of this, but you have just described a way that they could do it. And I God hope that people aren't listening to this. Well, I mean, obviously, your listeners are, but not...
Well, yeah, no, they won't be, mates, so don't worry.
How long were we going? Yeah, we lost them all by now. Yeah. But, you know, it is, and it just begs the question, like, what is the next stop on this route of tinkering with the game? You've already got red cards being rescinded. Everyone kind of accepted that at the time because, you know... It means you're going to miss a few games. But if you think about Son, when he got sent off when Andre Gomez broke his leg, you know, that stuffed our chance of getting anything out of that game. So there's already this kind of retrospective messing with the game. What's next?
What's next indeed? Well, I'll tell you what's next.
About the actual game.
Let's talk about the game.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Game. Yeah, let's kind of pick apart what we can from Spurs' performance, because I, you know, contrary to a lot of what I've seen, I actually thought Spurs were pretty good, even in the first half, where we apparently weren't. I thought Spurs played pretty well. I'm a big fan of Giovanni Lo Celso. I've got to say, he was somebody I wrote off pretty early. I just thought, my knee jerk to him, should we say, was Carlos kickable. It's not, you know, it's another Lamella. It's not going to happen for him. But now I see him as just, I don't want to sound ridiculous, but just one of the best players in the league. He just seems effortlessly superb in the way in which he just reads the game, the way in which he manages to win possession, the amount of work he does, and just being that guy that can play the pass before the pass, if you like. Yeah. Because it seems as though we still lack the pass in that final third. But he was very much like the fulcrum of a lot of what we were doing. Are you a particular fan of his?
Massive fan, and I was really, really excited when we signed him. And I think that his first season was a struggle for him because it was too crowded a field, and he had to kind of play a bit part here and there. And I got the sense that he was one of these players that would really benefit from just being given the responsibility that he was sharing when he was on the pitch with Eriksen, with Dele to some respects. And as you say, yesterday he was just superb and effortless as well. He reminds me that he can be our sort of like Coutinho type player. Although maybe a little bit more subtle. And, you know, it's the sort of player that you don't mind losing the ball because they're trying through balls that, yeah. You know, you try four, the fifth one comes off and you're through on goal. You know, that's what we've lacked a bit, that bit of just taking that risk. And I think he was brilliant. And as you say, just kind of everywhere. Højbjerg, who didn't fill me with a lot of confidence after the Everton game. And again, I know that trying not to be knee-jerk, but I thought he was decent. I thought Winks was very good. And as you know, I'm not the biggest kind of fan of Harry Winks. But he did very well. But you have to point to Newcastle's tactics as well. That
bizarre.
They were just, again, just so strange. Like,
yeah.
Even not pressing our midfield, and then just letting us play through them. And, you know, if not for their goalkeeper, which is something that we've said many, many times, we'd have absolutely buried them first half. And then, you know, Sun going off at half-time was problematic for us, but I still think we were in complete control. And it was a very good, fluid, sharp performance. And, you know, that's something you can take regardless of what the other team are doing. You know, you're picking up the second balls, your touch is good, you know where your other players are. And so, yeah, definitely a massive positive performance for us.
Can you see any particular reason why? Because it seems to be, you know, not only words but actions seem to be pointing to the fact that Ndombele and Mourinho are managing to reconcile their differences and actually work together to great effect now. And Ndombele is starting to look every bit the player that we hoped he would. I mean, I think he's a majestic footballer. He just looks brilliant. He almost looks like a throwback to a kind of Berbatov type player. Berbatov or Ginola, like, yeah, okay, not exactly positionally or whatever, but just that bit of excitement of him doing things on the ball, some of these little flicks, some of the turns he pulls off with actual purpose, that I just wonder, how has he done that? I don't see other players do that. Why don't all footballers do that? And then you realise that's because he's a special player and he has this kind of, yeah, maybe this kind of laziness, if we like. Yeah, I mean, there might be, I get that there's a lot of kind of like racial tropes and stuff that are often appropriated very sort of coarsely to black footballers, and lazy being one of those. I do feel with Ndombele, it was less a case of that. And it was, I mean, obviously I can't speak on everyone's intention, but I just mean for the wider discussion, it seemed to me that he did actually come across as quite a lazy footballer and his fitness wasn't great. But then I'm also like, a lot of people used to think that about Berbatov, and, you know, he was superb. Maybe he is just a languid footballer. Maybe that's kind of his thing. And the trade-off with that is that you get this player that can not only bamboozle the opposition, but also just pepper a game, pepper your side, like give it some excitement, actually get the ball moving forwards. But there still seems to be this hesitance to play him alongside Lo Celso. Do you get the feeling that this is Mourinho potentially being worried about their ability to play together in a stylistic way? Or do you think it's more just about managing the pair of them, knowing that they're both probably not quite at their peak fitness yet?
I think it's definitely the latter, to be honest, because on paper and what we've seen, those two, if they can, they'll have to adapt their games slightly to play together in some respects, but I think they'd be absolutely, or they have the potential to be absolutely brilliant together. And yeah, you're right. And Ndombele has kind of worked his way back into proceedings, which is great. I think the whole last season, bench warming, staff and injuries, I think, again, talking about the drama being injected into this, I mean, it's quite clear what happened. He was unfit. He moved to a new league that he needed to adapt. Yeah, right. I'm sure he had some growing up to do as well in terms of his kind of attitude. But, you know, he looks like he's trimmed down massively. He looks like he's really putting his shift in and got his head down. So, you know, that in itself is just, again, a natural kind of progression for things. Sometimes players get it. Sometimes it takes them a while for the penny to drop. And it's just that's the case. I don't think Mourinho's got a big question mark over Ndombele. I think he's just like, well, the guy's not fit, so he's not going to play. If he's fit and he shows me in training that he can achieve what I want him to, then he'll play. And I think it's as simple as that.
I'm looking forward to that moment, say, in next season's Champions League final, when Ndombele is just running riot, running rings around Liverpool or Bayern Munich or whoever it is in the final. And it's just that moment in Whiplash. You're going to have Mourinho on the sideline and he's going to be like, you know, ushering him on, giving him that hand as, you know, Ndombele's tapping the cymbal just before he goes in for the massive kind of drum solo that you see in that end, you know, when he's thrown him to the wolves. Kind of, you know, he wasn't sure if he was rushing or if he was dragging, but now he definitely knows he was rushing and it's all fallen into place, and he's Buddy Rich. He's going to go and smash it. Because Raj said the other week, and I'm kind of tempted to agree with him, that Ndombele could low-key be our player of the season if things go his way, because he came with such a huge reputation. We were all so excited about him, and it's almost like and the wider kind of footballing, you know, commentariat's just forgotten, actually, he's a really brilliant player, and he was touted as being one of the, you know, potential leading stars in European football just a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, I think he's one of our most uniquely talented players, potential-wise, obviously, because as we've said, he's still kind of adapting. But I think what he brings to a team, there's very few players like him in European football, certainly not in the Premier League, as we've seen flashes of it. So if we can just harness it, then, you know, superb. And I think I hadn't written him off, but I was kind of the opinion that we've given him enough chances, and if he doesn't want to bother, then get rid of him.
I was absolutely with you on that. Absolutely.
But on the flip side, you know, we still knew he was a brilliant player, and if we can get him involved, then great. And it seems to thankfully have been the latter.
Do you think the line, basically, that Spurs shouldn't be so bitter about the penalty. They should be more annoyed that they didn't bury more of their chances is particularly fair. Because, as you said, their goalkeeper did have an absolute stormer. And I struggle to think of any real opportunities that we were kind of profligate on or absolutely squandered.
No, we didn't. And we didn't let up. I mean, you know, we had to adapt a little in the second half. But this is the thing that, yes, you can wheel out that trope about you should have buried your chances. It's like, true, but you shouldn't have to score three or four goals just in case a penalty of that nature goes against you. Because Newcastle did not have a sniff, right? I think Lloris touched the ball twice with his gloves, like during play. One of those times was when he got a hand on the penalty. So that's just rewarding poor players. And the thing is, let's take it on a wider sense as well. I'll come back to the point about us being profligate, but Mike Ashley's face after that game, he was beaming. As a Newcastle fan, you know you're not going to sign any players now because he's got a point, and Newcastle got a point. So that's another thing. So he's not going to invest in, or he's less likely to invest in your team now that he's, you know, he'll know that they can get points like that in, because they've got Andy Carroll. That's got to be troubling for Newcastle fans. But going back to the profligate point, I thought we'd run away with it and we should have done. But again, there is an art to winning games 1-0. You should be able to go one up, and if, for instance, one of your best players goes off injured, and the fact that you've got 400 games in 10 days, you should be able to manage a game out 1-0, change your approach, because that is football. To then say, oh, well, you should have scored more goals. It's like, well, how's it? How's this our fault? So I don't overly buy it, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it is going to be an interesting few days ahead. We've still got plenty of games to come. We've got Chelsea coming up, and then we got, I'm not really sure how to pronounce it, but Maccabi Haifa.
Haifa, yeah.
Yeah. And that is at White Hart Lane, isn't it? I thought it was in Israel, but it is actually at White Hart Lane. So you'd hope we come through that. That is a proper test. But then again, Manchester United on the weekend. So there's going to be plenty of room for discussion. But I hope you have taken something from my mostly madcap ramblings today. I don't really know. What more to say for it? It feels like we've done quite a bit, doesn't it? But, you know, it is just, as much as you want to kind of say, that's it, I'm going to support Dog and Duck Rovers or whatever, you know, you still get drawn back into this awful catastrophe of a entertainment. It's more like, let's call it sports entertainment, like WWF. Yeah. Oh, no, that's pandas now, isn't it? It's WWE. That's
you can't pile drive one of them, mate.
I'll give it a go, mate. Like, if it fancies a bit, like, I'm not going to back away. Do you know what I mean? I'm double hard. But, I'll leave you, the listening public, with this little... this little excerpt from an article on the Irish Times by somebody called Ken Early. Yeah, I don't agree entirely with his article, but, you know, the final couple of paragraphs of it are probably quite fitting to this episode. So he writes, "The Premier League staggers on. It's poorly prepared teams delivering shambolic matches to trigger payments from pay TV companies that seem hardly less beleaguered themselves. This game, suddenly pathetic, deprived of the crowds that lend its aura of heroism, this game that's been reduced to a parody of itself, clinging to its place in a decaying culture, amidst a collapsing economy on a burning planet, this is the game that is now apparently in danger of being killed by the handball rule. It reminds us, if we were ever in danger of forgetting, that humankind cannot bear very much reality. Thank God we have the handball controversy to fixate on, as it forces our beloved sports celebrities to endure comical indignity and allows the rest of us to luxuriate in fiery and passionate denunciation. Long may we continue to get wound up about handball, which is so much more relatable than allowing ourselves to look too long at the big picture in all its overbearing bleakness. Just ruminate on that one, ladies and gents, and yeah, we'll see you again on another happy episode of Rule the Roost podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.